If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
I have had booty before, and I've had good booty, but I've never had this kind of booty.
Most people say that Tom Brady is the Johnny Bananas of the NFL.
For people that still see you in this Johnny Bananas role, give me a day in the life. They think you're like doing cocaine off some girl's stomach.
I only do tequila off of girls' stomachs. Okay. Cocaine's off the butt cheeks. Yeah, I'm also America's number one slow dancer, expert parallel parker, and I have a credit score of 680.
Well, you've been on it 24 seasons?
24 seasons, yeah.
That's incredible. How many?
Out of 40.
Did you have a favorite show that you've been on? Do you have a really good manager, or are you just someone who's that relevant that the opportunities are coming to you directly?
Had a manager, really bad falling out.
Are there any scenarios where you feel fearful?
Yeah, a lot. I am 42 in the physical sense. I am still hardwired as a 21-year-old.
Oh.
I'm like Peter Pan. I don't play hard to get, I play hard to forget.
Okay, good. So, well, we'll see after
you'll never
this
forget this one.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Well, I'm so excited about today's episode. Please welcome a man who has become the true icon in the world of reality TV, known for his fearless gameplay, sharp wit, and a persona that is larger than life. From unforgettable moments on The Challenge to hosting his own show, he's entertained us, surprised us, and kept us guessing. But there's more to him than what you see on the screen. He's here today on Misunderstood to share a deeper look into the journey that made him who he is, beyond the alliances and rivalries, beyond the wins and the losses. Please give a warm welcome to my friend, Johnny Bananas. Johnny, thank you so much for joining me here in Boca on Misunderstood.
Thank you for having me. I hope I make that montage for future guests. I want to be in your montage.
Of course, you absolutely will.
There's some legends in there.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. I take pride in who I have on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been a while. I've been trying to get you on the show. You are a hard person to pin down.
Which shouldn't be, because I literally own a business across the street and I live 5 minutes from here.
I know. Well, at least now I'm in the honor of your presence. So thank you.
Well, I've always said I don't play hard to get. I play hard to forget.
Okay, good.
So,
well, we'll see after
you'll
this
never
interview.
Forget this one.
good. So I can't start this conversation off without talking about what we went through in the last 24 hours. We are on the eve, or no, the day after, uh-huh, of the election results. How is this affecting you?
It hasn't affected me yet. I mean, I moved to Florida. I was a California resident my entire life. I've lived in New York for a stint, but I've been a born and raised Californian. There's a reason I opened my business in Florida and not in California. There's a reason that I'm a resident in Florida, not in California. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that just has to do with, you know, the way that that state's been run and taxes. 13.5% state taxes is the highest in the nation in California. There's 0% state taxes here. I don't know what is going to happen after this. There's a lot of times that we are promised, you know, change and hope and everything else. And I'm just got to sit back and bide my time. I wasn't able to vote, unfortunately, because I'm kind of in between. I didn't want to do the absentee thing back home. Right. So I think a lot is yet to be determined. But, you know, I have optimism in what's going to happen. I think if anything can be gained from what happened last night, it's that our system still works.
Yeah,
I feel like, and that I think should give everyone hope. There wasn't any, like, you know, voting discrepancies like there was last time. A lot of people came out to vote, and I think if one thing again can be gained from this, it's that. Regardless of what the government and the legacy media tries to do, the people have the last say.
Yeah, and I think what was interesting about it too, I'm from New York and I moved here in mm-hmm. the last year. You know, love him or not love him, it was interesting the way it went down last night. The people have spoken. I mean, exactly. I know that's stupid to say, but it's like the popular vote was won by him. And so many people in record numbers came out to vote. And, you know, you can argue with people about what they believe, their, you know, the way they treat each other, because I think there's been a lot of anger in the last couple months leading up to this. But the way he got on, I stayed up and watched the whole thing, the way he got up on stage last night mm-hmm. and, you know, accepted, you know, the nomination basically and said, you know, that he had won, I was pretty happy with it. I thought he didn't go off the rails. I thought it was he.
And on the flip side, where's Kamala?
Yeah, I know.
That's the thing.
As of right now, we haven't heard from her yet.
Here's the thing is,
I think she's shocked.
Yes.
What's happened?
Embarrassed. I mean, I would be. Like, here's the thing is, and again, this comes from being a competitor my entire life. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the hardest thing to do is lose with grace. Yeah. Winning with grace is very difficult, but losing with grace is even more difficult. And I think because now the problem is every second that goes by without her coming out and addressing the nation, addressing her fans, addressing yeah. her campaign, it's just the pressure and the attention is just mounting more and more and more. I think she should have, for all the people that came out to her campus yesterday, I think, you know, they were owed, they were owed something, you know, at least a thank you. And that hasn't happened yet.
I don't know that she's that great off the cuff, right? So I think she's really trying to figure out what she's going to say. There are so many people that are upset. I mean, mm-hmm. I saw a little bit this morning on social media the way that a lot of people are reacting that are
Absolutely.
Very upset by this. And I think she wants to say the right thing to try and unite everyone. So I think she has to take a second to get that right,
I mean,
in my
50
opinion.
Million people, if not more, voted for her. So so, I mean—
And those people are devastated.
Yeah.
So
and I get it. And I think it was going to be the same
either way.
It's like watching the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah.
The two teams have made it there and their fan bases are absolutely rabid and they want nothing more than their side to win.
Right.
And there's always going to be a winner and there's always going to be a loser. Again, though, I think regardless of what side you're on, I think because the victory was so decisive in one direction that there's not going to be all this ugliness that we had with, you know, Bush versus Gore or mm-hmm. even the last time with Biden and Trump, where yeah. I don't think anyone now because is going to question
yeah.
the outcome and the authenticity of what happened. I think it was a mandate.
Yeah.
And I think what's going to have to happen is two things. I think the Republicans, the conservatives and Trump are going to actually have to follow through on all the promises that they've made.
Yeah.
And I think just for the betterment of the country, you know, the Democrats and the left are going to have to look at themselves in the mirror and be like, where did we go wrong?
Yeah, they have a chance to, like, scratch this whole thing and start over.
Exactly. And
that's what they needed to do anyway.
Because if you look at the Republican Party now, as opposed to 4 years ago, 8 years ago, it's completely changed. Yeah. It has completely changed. And some would say for the better, some would say for the worse. And, you know, I think that, again, the you know, Democrats and liberals kind of have to do the same thing and be like, all right, if this is why, if the majority, if somehow Trump won the popular vote, what was he saying and what was he doing that mm-hmm. we were not? Who was he addressing? What was his messaging? And I think that's what they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to possibly switch up or just change kind of, you know, the way that they've gone about doing things.
Exactly.
So.
All right. Well, anyways, let's talk about you.
All right. hate that topic. No, let's not talk about me.
First of all, how did you get the name Johnny Bananas?
Long story.
What is your real name?
Jonathan Amadeus DiVenanzio. Although my real name is not Jonathan. My friends call me Jonathan.
What do you mean? What is it?
Just kidding. It's John.
Oh.
Jonathan's like J-O-N. John, like Jonathan, right. But mine's J-O-H-N. I didn't become Johnny until I got the nickname Johnny Bananas,
okay.
Which didn't officially stick until I was about 18 years old.
Did you give it to yourself?
No.
Oh.
My best friend / business partner at Rumble actually gave it to me. The origin story actually is from when I was a child. I don't know, I was 8, 9 years old. Watched the movie Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay.
With Eddie Murphy.
I love that movie.
Yeah. Do you remember the part where he sticks the bananas in the tailpipe?
The tailpipe, yeah. All right.
So that's what I tried to do that to my mom.
Oh, nice.
To prevent her from taking me and my sisters to school. I watched this movie and I'm like, and I was a bit of like Dennis the Menace, like Bart Simpson as a kid. And I loved pranks and I loved joking around. I loved being the class clown. And I'm like, oh, this is all, like, this could actually work. Like,
No, it didn't work.
Car started right up.
Right. And did the banana explode or anything?
Didn't explode, but it almost like, she almost got like carbon monoxide poisoning on her way to work. Because basically all it did is just backed up all the exhaust into the car. So she doesn't even go to, well, before work, she's on the freeway. We lived in Orange County. She worked in LA, hour and a half commute. Goes to the mechanic because her car started filling up with fumes. And he looks around a little bit, digs around, finds a whole bunch of bananas in the tailpipe. So she automatically obviously knew it was me. I got in a lot of trouble for that. So that was kind of like the first time that, like, you know, I had a run-in with bananas, I guess you'd say. And then fast forward, I moved to New York after high school. I got a job at the Roosevelt Field Mall in Long Island at Banana Republic.
Okay.
A guy,
second time it comes into your life. Okay.
Guy that I met, who's current, again, my best friend, you know, I'm the godfather of his son, my business partner. I met him. He worked at Kenneth Cole and he had a whole group of friends and there was three Johnnies in his little group already.
Okay.
So they had nicknames for all of them to distinguish who was Johnny Blonde, Johnny Patience. So then I became Johnny Bananas because I worked at Banana Republic.
Got it.
And it just stuck. And then when I went on reality TV, I was like, I don't want to be John. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know this. It was just like, I ended up creating a brand for myself that now, 20 years later, has really, it's one of the best decisions I ever made. And I even know I was doing it. And so that's the thing I went on. And I wanted to, you know, kind of separate myself from everyone else and become, you know, a little more unique. So instead of John, I went by Johnny Bananas and it stuck.
Amazing. How old were you when you first got into reality?
23.
Okay, so before we start on that conversation, so you worked at this clothing store. Mm-hmm. What else did you do? And what were your aspirations?
So I didn't even want to go to college. When I was in high school, I've always been, and my dad says this all the time, he's like, you've always been like, you like the social aspect of school and the social aspect of life more than you did like the academic side, right? So in school, I was always a very bright kid. I just never applied myself because I was so much more interested in the social aspect. Recess.
Right.
I grew up Catholic, right? So I'd go to church every Sunday. I could not have been more bored by listening to Mass. My favorite part was when you get to greet everybody around you.
Right.
Meet everyone. I'm just sitting the whole time like, all right, when do I get to say hi to this guy and talk to this guy and shake this girl's hand? And that's just kind of how I've always been, but I've also always been like a class clown. I've always loved to get a rise out of people. I've always loved to get a laugh out of people. My sister, my younger sister to this day, deserves an award for all the teasing that she went through. And I feel like I've now managed to take that, mischievous nature, as my dad calls it, mm-hmm. and I've managed to somehow turn it into a career. And my original aspirations, I guess, I mean, I didn't necessarily even want to go to college until I moved to New York. I went to Nassau Community College, uh-huh. I made the dean's list 2 semesters in a row, and then my cousin got a full ride scholarship for football to Penn State. Mm-hmm. I went to visit him one weekend, and I'm like, yo, this is awesome.
Right.
This is school. So I applied there, and I transferred as a sophomore, and I spent 3 years in at Penn State. And again, I think it was the first time I realized that how important the education outside of the classroom is.
Yeah,
it's the first time for a lot of kids. They're out of the nest. They're not they're out of the home. They're not under, you know, their parents' watchful eye, and they're kind of on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you really see what you're made of and what yeah. you're all about. I didn't join a frat. Everyone's like, oh, were you a frat guy? I wasn't a frat guy because I didn't want to pay for friends. Okay. No offense to anyone in the Greek life out there. That was just never my jam. So moving to New York, reinventing myself in New York, and then going to college and doing it again, I think that was the first test where, and that is what really helped me grow and form into the person that I am today.
What did you major in?
Economics.
Okay. That's not easy.
And I got a degree from the business school, so Smeal Business College too.
Wow. Do you think what you learned there somehow applies to what you do now because you do all these challenges?
Not the academic sense. Again, it was what I learned from a social sense.
Interesting.
It's funny because when my sophomore year, they were out of dorm space. So they had what's called supplemental housing, mm-hmm. which was they turned in the dorms, they turned the study halls, the big study halls that are probably the size of this podcast space, mm-hmm. into dormitories. And they put bunk beds in them. So it was literally like an orphanage. So I was in a room with 9 other people, guys. So when I applied for The Real World, which was the first show that I did, one of the first questions they asked was, have you ever lived in a place with like strangers? And I'm like, yeah, I did it for an entire year, my sophomore year of college. And then it just so happens that The Real World is you're in a house with 7 strangers.
This episode is brought to you by Holistic Goddess. Holistic Goddess has been such a trusted resource for me on my health journey. One product I really wanted to highlight is their Holistic Menopause Support by PhD Health. It's been a game changer for me during perimenopause, and here's why I love it. It eases discomfort. It really helps with hot flashes and mood swings. It boosts focus. The ingredients in it, including creatine, support mental sharpness. I feel more focused and clear-headed, which is so important for my busy days. It nurtures comfort. It gently addresses vaginal dryness with black cohosh. It's comforting to have that support during this time. It has natural ingredients. I love that it uses these ingredients like sage and rhubarb extract. If you're going through similar changes like perimenopause and menopause, I highly recommend giving this a try. It's been a relief for me, and I think it could help you too. Go to holisticgoddess.com and use code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD. Code UNDERSTOOD for 15% off all orders. Again, that's holisticgoddess.com for 15% off using code UNDERSTOOD.
Right. Isn't it interesting how things in life happen like that? I always call it like the Karate Kid, wax on, wax off. Like you do all these random things throughout your life and somehow they all come together at one point and you're like, oh, now I know why I did these things.
So I think that's called, or I know there's a phrase for it, quantum entanglement. I think it's a little bit different. I think quantum entanglement is like when you see someone or meet someone and then somehow that person's comes back into your life.
Full circle, yeah.
But I think what I've always said, and for some reason, I remember growing up, I'm like, I don't know how these things keep falling into place for me, mm-hmm. but without a plan, I've never had a plan. I'm not a planner. You know how some people are like, oh yeah, you know, I'm gonna go here for school. I'm gonna major in this. I'm gonna get married. We're gonna live here. I'm gonna do this for a living. My kids are gonna. That's never been me. I've just always just kind of put one foot in front of the other, do what I do, and things just happen to fall into place for me.
Show up and see what happens.
And for the longest time, I just thought I was the luckiest guy on earth, and it was coincidental. But what I've learned over the years is I'm a big believer in energy, and the more positive energy you put out into the universe, the better things happen to you. It's like magnetism. It's like if you're putting positive energy out, that's attractive. If you're putting negative energy out, it's, you know, repulsive,
yeah.
kind of the same way a magnet works. So I just feel like because of what I've done, who I've met, the paths that I've crossed, the positive energy that I've radiated out into the universe over the years. It's just, you know, kind of had a way of, you know, coming back my direction.
Right. So The Real World was the first show you did. Did you have a job when you applied to that?
No, I was in college.
Oh, you were still in college.
I did have a job at the Gingerbread Man. It was my last real job. I worked at a pizza shop at Penn State called the G-Man, the Gingerbread Man.
Oh, my God. Okay, amazing.
So people are like, what's your last real job? I was like, I have not had a real job for now going on 19 years. But that's and that's one of the biggest knocks. I'm not one of the biggest knocks, but like fans or haters always love
biggest
to say
misunderstanding.
That.
I think
when are you gonna get a real job?
Yeah.
Okay. To this day, I'm still waiting for somebody to give me the definition of a real job. So because I don't sit in a cubicle from 9 to 5 and have 2 weeks vacation every year and a 401k and a health plan, that means I don't have a real job. Well,
if you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
No, but I get it because I think people don't understand how you can make a career out of reality TV. They don't get it. Actually pays the bills in a very quick, succinct amount of time. You get a lot more money than some people make in a year. And it's very rare for someone to continually do this for decades to be able to sustain it. So you've been a very lucky and one of the only people, I think, that's really made a career out of
it. Yeah. Well, and again, it goes back to the – so that's what I would have said. I've been lucky. But it took me a long time to actually give myself credit for where I ended up. And it's like it isn't luck.
Right.
It's for
strategy.
Me, it's the fact that I haven't stepped away. Every single other person that's done reality TV, whether it's on my show or otherwise, has at one point or another kind of taken a break, started a family, had a relationship, had kids. I've never done that. Now, I'm also lucky to be on the one show. The challenge is basically my original season was The Real World. Seven strangers picked to live in a house, have their lives taped, the original reality television show. Mine was in Key West, Florida. And then there was another show called Road Rules, and these were both MTV kind of coming of age shows. Mm-hmm. Once those shows were over, then they had what was called the challenge, where they would take fan favorites from those two shows, and then that you would compete in different competitions, physical, strategic, carnival games, whatever it is. So it allowed you then to extend your shelf life on TV and continue going back.
Right.
And again, I was given the opportunity to do that.
But up until that point, were people only doing it, they got one opportunity to be on the challenge, or you knew you could continue that? I mean, you've been on it 24 seasons?
24 seasons, yeah.
That's incredible. How many? 40?
Out of 40.
Yeah.
So I started at season 13. Mm-hmm. So there's only been 3 seasons, I guess, that I've taken off.
But is that normal that people repeat?
Well, it depends. So it's all based on what you bring
to the table. Yeah.
And if you are a charismatic, dynamic, type of character that is gonna bring drama or is gonna bring good television, then yeah, they'll keep having you back. And I just happen to have the perfect mix of athleticism, strategery, intelligence, tomfoolery. Like, I just kind of brought all those different elements to the table. And I feel like it's weird. The challenge is somehow, some way, I found the perfect profession for myself. Because reality TV, I've always been told my entire life to conform to, this is the box we want to put you in, right? Whether it was jobs I had, because I've worked corporate jobs. Well, Banana Republic, I guess, you know. But I remember growing up in that being that corporate structure, I'm always like, I don't want authority.
Yeah.
I want to be able to be in charge of myself, and I want to be able to be me. And the reality TV is the first time that they actually encouraged you to be sometimes the worst version of yourself. And I mean, I started reality TV back in the Wild West when things were a lot more lawless than they are now. And I think, that's kind of, it's allowed me to learn and change and learn a lot about myself. I've been able to watch myself grow up on TV. I started when I was 23, I'm 42 now. Mm-hmm. And the thing about being able to watch yourself on TV is you're able to see yourself from a perspective that most people don't ever get a chance to see. You see yourself in reality as like, this is who I am. And then other people see you as someone different.
Right.
But when you're watching yourself from that third perspective, you're able to see yourself the way others see you.
Right.
And I was able to take a lot of things about myself that I didn't like, throw them away. And I was able to keep things about myself that I liked and, kind of highlight those things. So I've been lucky enough to, grow up and change and take my lumps, in the public eye. And
well, I want to ask, what do you think are some of the most common misconceptions about you based on your reality TV persona?
I don't have a heart. I don't have emotion. I'm an asshole. And these things are true in some capacity. But what a lot of people don't realize, the person you're sitting next to interviewing right now is not Johnny Bananas. This is John DiVinanzio. The Johnny Bananas persona is, yes, it is who I am, but it is a much more loud, over the top, in your face version of myself. And I have actually, in a way, created that and used that over the years as a protective mechanism. The show that I do, the world that I live in, is very exploitative. People will exploit any vulnerabilities they see. I mean, that's what my show is all about. My show is literally, it's like being in a shark tank. So people will take any weakness that they see and they will exploit it to try and, either end you on the show and get rid of you. So I have this persona that I put out there that is sarcastic and it is emotionless and it is, everything is tongue in cheek and I don't take anything seriously. Because if you attack that persona, you're not affecting me.
Sure.
You're affecting that shield that I put out there. Mm-hmm. And that's why it is difficult for me sometimes to open up and to be vulnerable because I'm so used to people trying to get one over on me, get the best of me, burn me, that as long as I keep them at arm's distance, they can't do that. So what that comes across then a lot of times to people who see me on TV or on social media, they mistake me not showing emotion for not having any.
Right.
So I think that's one of the big misconceptions about me.
Do you think that you've learned a ton of things throughout the 24 seasons you've been on that have really made you win? You won 7 times,
yeah.
Right? I mean, is there a right way to do it? Or does it depend on the cast and the season? Like, how does that work?
It changes every season. So the cast... even though there are mainstays, the cast switches up. The theme of the show is different. The location's different. The elements, the challenges, everything's different every season. So I never go in with a plan, which I think is one of the things. I never go in like, this is what I'm going to work with. This is going to be my strategy. Mainly because anyone and everyone that I've worked with in the past at one point or another has burned me. Because I have risen to such a high level on the show, mm-hmm. I'm the face of the show. It's like I go on and instead of people wanting to work with me, everyone just wants to get rid of me.
Right.
So that's what I've had to deal with. However, a lot of people come on and their minds are in the wrong spot, especially with guys. Guys come on, they want to be the biggest, strongest guy there. Mm-hmm. Which strength you need in some capacity, but this show is all about more like agility and endurance. But more importantly than that, I think what has separated me aside from other people on the show is my adaptability. Mm-hmm. You can put me, and again, I think this is what I've always had a very high EQ, and I've always just been able to like understand people and the human condition and why people do what they do. I'm an empath, so I just am able to understand and read people. And being able to go on a show like The Challenge, where that's what it's all about. It's all about human interaction. It's just sociology and how people are operating in groups. And being able to like read that and understand that and exploit that and manipulate that is, I think, what separated me aside. One of my favorite quotes is from Darwin. And I think this kind of sums me up in a lot of ways and my success on not just The Challenge, but in life. He says, in nature, it's not the strongest nor the smartest that survive. It's those with the ability to adapt. Mm. And again, you could put me anywhere in front of anyone and I'll just figure it out.
Are there any scenarios where you feel fearful?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I had to jump off an 82-story building on the last show. I didn't free fall 180 feet. When I was younger, what's funny, and I don't know if this is just a thing that happens to men or if this happens to women as well. The older I get, the more mortal I feel. When I was younger, dude, when I was in my 20s, I'd be on a plane and I'm like, if this plane goes down, like I'm gonna survive.
Right.
Like, I don't know how. I'll put cushions around me.
I still think that. I'm like, if somebody hijacks the plane, I could talk them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh, if I'm on a building, I'm like, if I fell off here, there's gonna be a pile of hay down on the ground that I'm gonna fall into. Like I'm not gonna die, right?
Yeah.
So that translated over the challenges where we would do the most off the wall, jumping off semi trucks, you know, submerging ourselves underwater, hanging off the front of tanks, jumping off buildings, and it never used to bother me. Now it's like everything that I do, getting out of bed, I'm like, am I gonna twist a knee? You know? So this sense of like mortality has definitely crept in a lot more.
Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just because you're getting older, or do you think it's because you think that there are some things that you still want to do that you haven't been able to do?
I think age has a lot to do with it. I mean, I think, trust me, I am a much, even though listen, the fire still burns inside me, but it's nowhere near what it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I came up, I was one of the most, again, aggressive, you know, in your face, obnoxious human beings. That was, and again, it worked for TV. But I've like calmed down so much. Like, I just don't, everything to me used to be life and death.
Yeah.
Every battle, I had to win every battle. I died on every hill. And I've learned now that it's like, if you treat every battle like life and death, you're going to die a lot of times.
Right.
So now I kind of reserve, I'm a lot more reserved than I used to be. But also I feel like when I first started doing reality TV, the pay wasn't what it is now.
I was just going to ask you, was the fire more about, oh, I'm getting a lot of money for this, I can do this again? Or was it like, this is so fun to compete? Like, what was the fire originally?
It was a combination of the two. It was, I loved the competition aspect. I loved the party aspect. Mm-hmm. I loved the being on TV aspect. We got paid to do it, but you didn't really make money unless you won the show.
Oh.
So,
wasn't even like Favored Nations?
No, our weekly stipend was terrible. I made more doing bar appearances than I did going on the show. But if you won, then you got a big paycheck at the end. So I think what motivated me to continue to win and be successful as I was, my biggest motivator was not having to go home and get a real job.
Right.
Because I would think about it and I'm like, all right, and we'd only do one show a year. If I don't win this show and I don't win this purse at the end, I'm going to have to go home and get a real job.
Yeah.
And that was terrifying.
That sucked. Yeah.
So I'm like, I have to win. And that's kind of...
You could be folding shirts again.
Dude, I could... fucking serving someone a Sprite. They'd be like, aren't you Johnny Bananas? Yeah, can I get a refill of my soda? So that was what was terrifying to me. And it just so happened that, you know, I won enough times where that never had to happen. And then they started doing more shows a year. I started getting opportunities outside of the show.
Yeah, what kind of opportunities were you given at the beginning?
So again, I was doing 20 bar appearances a month. I was doing six
like meet and greet type of things.
Okay. 3 hours at a bar, wherever.
Like guest bartending or
all of it. Okay. Hosting contests.
That's so fun.
It was fun. It was a lot. I mean, I'd be in a different state, in a different bar 20 straight days out of the month. So I was constantly flying everywhere.
Right.
Wouldn't be able to do that now.
Right.
Spring break, there used to be a company called Student City. We would do 6 weeks of spring break, and that's partying for six straight weeks. Wow. So, I mean, that was kind of how I made a living back in the day.
But was the pay worth it?
I mean, for me, I was a 23-year-old kid, and I was making $3,000 a night going to a bar and drinking. I remember, because this is before, like they really got strict with like flying and what you were allowed to bring on the plane. I would literally have, because they used to pay, obviously the bars wanted to pay off the books. So they would just give us a stack of either 20s or $100 bills.
Okay.
I would travel around. So, and I didn't want to put that in the bank. Mm. So I would literally travel around with $30,000-$40,000 in cash in a backpack. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like going through the TSA, and they were like, "What the hell is this?" Like, guys, if I explained it to you, you wouldn't believe me. So, So I mean, that's just how it used to be. But I mean, that was how I made a living.
Right.
Was going on TV and doing, you know, bar and club appearances.
And as a young guy, and even now, I mean, how did you manage that? Like, what did you think to do with the money? Did you buy a fancy car? Did you know how to save it?
I saved it. I never bought that. That's the other thing. Even now, it's like I've never been a lavish spender, and I think a lot of that just is the upbringing. My upbringing is very blue collar. My mom worked for the city of Santa Monica. My dad was in the military. My dad's always pounded this like, you know, this blue collar mentality into my head. Mm-hmm. Save your money. If you can afford a Cadillac, buy a Chevy.
Right.
You only need one thing: one house, one car, one girlfriend. And that's always been like his, you know, kind of old school Italian military shoebox mentality. To this day, my dad still writes handwritten letters.
I love that.
Still pays everything by check. Still balances his own checkbook.
Yeah.
Still is on me all the time about, you know, up until I was 30, my dad still wanted me to join the military. He's like, you got to do it. He goes, you know, you're going to 2 weekends a year, you go to the reserves, they're going to give you free health care. You know, if you don't, but that was the way he still to this day is like, I have no idea how you're making a living.
Right.
Doing what you're doing.
Right.
It's impressive. He goes, I just don't get it. So I think
my mother still shows up after Christmas, writes my thank you notes for me and puts them in front of me so I can sign them and then mails them for me because she thinks I'm incapable.
Are you Italian?
No.
Okay.
No. But it's just, I think that's old school.
It
and
is.
Like, you know, but I kind of love it at the same time.
I love it too.
Yeah.
I love it too. So I think that's, so growing up with that mentality, in my head, I'm always been like, no matter how much money I have, it's just going to disappear one day.
Yeah.
Or I'm not going to have it. I don't know. So
there's also that fear. I mean, and I get this because you've gone from thing to thing and you have been strategic or lucky enough to put yourself in the situation where you continually get it, but you never know what that next thing will 100%. Be. And that's the fear that keeps you going, but also prevents you from doing anything too outrageous, I think.
But what's funny though, is there's people that haven't had nearly the success that I have. And the way I watch people, it's like what they spend money on and the way they spend money. I'm like, you're out of your mind.
Yeah.
Like
they're going to be an Uber
driver. I know people that literally
eventually.
Are like couch surfing and it's like, they'll make all this money and they'll spend it all throughout the year and then they have to go on another show just to like support this like lifestyle. So I'm like living paycheck to paycheck and that's never been me and I've never been able to do that. So I mean I've invested in obviously, you know, the business that Rumble that I've invested in. That's probably the biggest investment that I ever made. Mm-hmm. I've invested in property. I've obviously invested a lot in my you know, clothing brand. I invest a lot in myself.
Yeah.
I'm super crazy about health and wellness. Whether, you know, any cheat code I can have, any edge that I could get in order to just like kind of slow down, you know, father time, And I think, again, it kind of shows in, like, you know, the longevity that I've had on reality TV, not just from a physical standpoint, but from a mental standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, I've often said, I'm like, when I die, I want to donate my brain to science so they can study the long-term side effects of reality television on the brain. Because what I've done to myself and what I've done to my brain over the last, I'm almost like, I don't even think I should still be functioning the way that I do.
Right.
Because of, I mean, just this alternate reality and universe that I have forced myself to live in.
So you're on a show that's out now. Are you competing with kids that are in their 20s?
Yeah.
And do you see a difference in someone your age versus their age? And obviously in terms of physical stuff, but do you think your experience has just made you 100% better? Or you think because they're new to it, there's a chance that they have an upper hand?
So both. So obviously, I mean, I'm not what I was, mm-hmm. right? From a physical standpoint. And, you know, it pains me just because it's like I'm out there and I want to still be as fast and as strong and as agile as I was in my 20s, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. The way I look at myself is it's almost like you look at pitchers later on in their career in baseball or quarterbacks or whatever sport, and they go from being, you know, the guy that could throw a fastball by you that you can't hit, mm-hmm. to then needing to learn how to throw junk pitches and keep you and be more strategic about the way that they pitch and kind of keep you off balance. And that's kind of like where I'm at now. I can still bring it when I need to, whether it's a, you know, physical elimination or, you know, one of our finals, which are absolutely brutal. But for me, it's more about the mind games and the mental manipulation. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've gotten very good at. And what's great about the challenge is, yes, it's physical. You have to have physicality. You have to have endurance. You have to have strength. You have to be athletic. But it's a social game.
Yeah.
So as long as you've got the social aspect kind of locked down, then, you know, the rest is easier. But I mean, yeah, I'm competing with guys, dude, last season. I mean, semi-pro soccer players, college football players. And I almost feel like every season I go on, it's almost like, you know, in a pride of lions. It's like there's the old lion that's kind of been there that's still protecting the pride. But mm-hmm. then there's the young ones that are trying to, you know, upstage him. And that's kind of like where I'm at now. But, you know, I've done a pretty good job protecting it.
The challenge is on MTV, yep. Yes? Is there a difference that you've noticed throughout the years of being on an episodic show on TV versus doing a streaming show? Are they shot different?
Yeah, definitely. Production's completely different. For example, the challenge is 10 weeks long,
uh-huh.
8 to 10 weeks long, filming 24 hours a day.
Where you are secluded with the cast?
Yes, okay. You're in a... you know, mansion, villa, bunker.
We live in. Have your phones?
No. Complete isolation from the outside world.
Okay.
Last season that we did, this was in Vietnam, the one that's actually airing right now, season 40. We got two pieces of news while we were in, the entire time we were there, we got two news updates. One was Diddy was going to jail for human trafficking. Mm-hmm. And the other one was Kendrick Lamar and Drake were beefing and having a rap battle.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. I got home, and like 2 weeks after I was home, I went out for sushi with this girl, and we started talking. And I mentioned something about O.J. Simpson. She's like, yeah, he died. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, he died like a month ago. No idea. No, 2 weeks out, had no idea O.J. Simpson died. But in a weird way, especially in this day and age with so much technology and social media and you're just glued to your phone all the time, that 8 to 10 week device detox is so nice.
Yeah, and you must make amazing friendships.
You talk to people, you get to know people. It's amazing. As soon as we are, as soon as these devices are pried from our clutches, how much we revert back to just being human beings.
Right.
And ask questions, tell stories. We get so creative. We're playing games. And now, mind you, a lot of that is just done out of, necessity because there's nothing else to do.
Sure.
But the fact that we're able to revert back to that, and people that I've been on a challenge with for 10 weeks, I know more about and I've experienced more with and I've connected closer with people I've known for 10 years.
Yeah, of course.
because of that amount of time that that you spend together. And you know, as hard as it is sometimes being away from your phone, it's so nice to like have that mental escape.
Do you, are you close with a lot of people that you've done shows with, or are you a very private person that once you leave, you're kind of gone?
So both. So obviously I have friends from this show that, and you do, you grow so close to people because of, you know, what you experience here, like you know, they call it trauma bonding.
Yeah.
But I also like to keep my real life and my reality life separate. Okay. I think that's one of the things that's allowed me to have just the mental, you know, escape that I have, is I'm not clocked into reality television 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's because I draw a very hard line between my real friends, my real life, and my reality TV life. Now, there is a bleed over, right? But I do as much as I can to keep that to a minimum. Also, I do it again just for the game. The more people that you're friends with outside that you have to film with, the more people you're potentially gonna have to burn at one point or another. So the bigger group of friends you go into a challenge with, at one point or another, you're gonna have to, you know, burn a bridge. You're gonna have to, you know. So I've just never wanted to do that. So I keep my circle very small. And I've been burned by so many people so many times on this show.
And then, but then do they turn around and later say off camera, oh, it was just for the show, forgive me? Or are you guys just...
Yeah, but it's almost one of those things once it's done. And here's the thing. I don't take my work home with me, right? It doesn't matter what happens on the screen. Once it's over, outside of the game, like, let bygones be bygones. Sure. But once we go back and you're back into that environment...
Those feelings come back.
You know, there is a carryover effect.
Do you think that choosing reality TV as a career has prevented you from doing something? I mean, it sounds like you travel all the time. I'm assuming you can't have a dog.
Yeah.
You can't have a girlfriend unless she's on the show with you. Those kind of things. What do you feel like you've missed out most on?
All of that. I mean, but I think that's what life is all about. I was an econ major, so there's opportunity cost and opportunity benefit. And I remember the first time we learned about that, it was leisure versus income. So if you put that on a chart, if you put leisure and income on a chart, the more income you have, the less leisure you're going to have, the less free time you're going to have, and vice versa.
Right.
The more leisure you have, the less income you're going to have. The more you travel, the more you're out there, the less you're going to work. But I've somehow found a flaw in the matrix where I've managed to find a way to totally just erase that chart and make my own, where I found a way to have leisure and income at the same time. So how about that, Professor Dirk Mateer? but I think the opportunity cost that has come with that is the fact that I haven't been able to, I guess, get serious about life when it comes to, you know, as it relates to family, relationship, stability. I have as much stability as I can in my life, with as chaotic as my life is. Again, I travel all the time.
Yeah.
I was just in Amsterdam 2 weeks ago filming. You know, I've got to fly back to California this week to film a cooking show. I'm potentially leaving in February for a show, and then I'm going to be leaving in May for another show. But it's that freedom and that ability for me to have the ability to do that has allowed me to be where I'm at right now. And this is what I say. I look at other guys on my show, guys and girls on my show and in other shows. And the majority of them, almost all of them, who have stepped away and have started families and have gotten married, or gotten real jobs, good for them. Like, I'm all about it. If that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do. But what's happened then is their ability to stay relevant and their ability to keep growing in this industry has suffered.
And sometimes even make the income that they used to, which makes them suffer.
And everyone's like, dude, like, how have you managed to like stay on and stay relevant for as long as you have? And that's what I've had to do. That's the sacrifice that I've had to make in order to do that.
Right. You just mentioned a couple projects that you have coming up. I'm curious, for people that are listening and want to get into this, do you have a really good manager, or are you just someone who's that relevant that the opportunities are coming to you directly?
Had a manager, really bad falling out. This is what I'm saying. Like, I've been burned by those closest to me.
Yeah.
And that just happened pretty recently. I found out there was a lot of you know, mishandling of funds and embezzlement going on, that sort of thing. So I have a pretty solid team around me now. But, you know, over the years, what I think I've learned from this is, like, the only person at the end of the day that's going to protect me and look out for me is me.
Right.
So again, I'm very guarded with those that I let close to me. But I have managed to stay in the public eye for so long.
Right.
That, no, I've got opportunities. The majority of the opportunities that I have now are people coming and basically pitching me for shows or for projects, that sort of thing. I'm in talks right now with a production company about doing a docuseries on my life here in South Florida and just all the shenanigans that, you know, I get into, whether it's my gym, my travel. And that opportunity, I was approached. It's a huge production company, too. And that's what, so that's kind of like the evolution that I want to make. As much as I love going on TV and being a cast member, at some point there's I'm going to have to, you know, kind of take the reins and be like, all right, now instead of just being a piece of the puzzle, I want to be like the entire puzzle.
Sure.
So that's kind of like the next step. But, and I think another reason that that's happened is because I've been on MTV for so long.
Yeah.
That people that when I first started were PAs, you know, executive assistants, that sort of thing, they've now risen up in the ranks as well. They're now EPing shows.
Right.
They're now in charge of projects, that sort of thing. And they've known me this entire time. So now there's a lot of people out there in the industry that have come up with me that now are decision makers, and they're able to kind of like, you know, plug me into different projects. But again, that's all about making and nurturing relationships.
Sure.
And that's what I've done. Every person that I meet, especially in the entertainment industry, doesn't matter what level they're at. One of the cameramen for my original season of The Real World was the executive producer of Dancing with the became the executive producer of Dancing with the Stars. Yeah. So you never know, like where people are gonna make it in life, you know.
Did you have a favorite show that you've been on?
I mean, wow, I've had a lot of amazing favorites, I guess. I think as it relates to the challenge, probably the first one that I won, which was called The Island. We were basically marauded on an island in the Dominican Republic for 5 weeks. And making it through that, it was very similar to Survivor. Making it through that and winning that, it was my first win. And, you know, it was the first time that I really had to dig deep. That was a really high moment. Obviously, I did a season of The Traitors, which was an amazing opportunity. Didn't last very long. I was the first
show
one murdered.
Completely,
you know,
exploded.
Yeah.
And it was so fun watching that.
Yeah.
And so what was the experience like? So let me ask you a question. You were off, as you just said, very quickly. Do they keep you there while the rest of the filming is going on? You go home.
Yeah. I mean, I stayed for a little bit extra time because I wanted to, you know, bang around Scotland a little bit.
Right.
But shows like Traitors, House of Villains, it's another show I did on E! Last year, Worst Cooks in America. What's fun about doing competition shows outside of like my purview is I get to take all of the skills that I've learned and that I've honed on the challenge, and then I get to take them in front of a whole new production company, network, fan base, cast, and I get to showcase what I've learned and what I've, you know, the knowledge that I've accumulated over the years in a whole different platform.
Right.
And for me, that is so exciting.
Yeah.
Slightly terrifying because you don't know how that's going to translate.
Right. But like, as I said earlier, my 12-year-old daughter knew you from Traitors.
Yeah.
Which obviously she's not watching MTV and The Challenge right
yet. Yeah.
You know, so I think that's very cool.
Good for her. Although I will say, so I do Cameo, right? Anyone who wants a Cameo, shout out your boy. But I do cameos, and I mean, I was telling yesterday, my 7-year-old son threw up in school the other day. He feels very embarrassed about him. Can you please, you're his idol. Can you please tell him everything's okay? And I'm like, buddy, like, come on, man. Like, I actually threw up in elementary school. I used to be, believe it or not, terrified of public speaking. And I remember I had to give this presentation. I was in elementary school, and right before I went up to speak, I puked all over the place. So that was, you know, kind of message to him is it was like, we've all been there. Like, yeah. Don't worry about it. But then I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, your 7-year-old is watching the challenge and watching me.
That's cool.
On reality TV, which is pretty wild. So.
Oh, okay, good. Well, then she's not too young. Yeah. I'll have her watch tonight.
Yeah, please do.
Is there a show that you are a fan of that you've never been on?
Yeah, Dancing with the Stars, The Bachelor. That'd be great. I think they need to have a Bachelor in between The Bachelor and The Golden Bachelor.
Yes. Hi, I'm over here too.
The Banachelor.
Oh, okay. But what would your age? Okay, let's talk about women for a second. What would be your age range?
Hey, Christian, get ready on the edit button here.
Because you're 42, as you said. Mm-hmm. What if you're filling out a form online for who you want to date, what's your age range?
So here's the problem. Yes, I am 42 in the physical sense. Mm. I am still hardwired as a
21-year-old. Oh, okay.
That's the one thing about reality TV. I think one of the other unintended consequences, side effects, whatever you want to call it. Mm. Emotionally, I'm stunted. Growth, I think. And that's because I'm like Peter Pan. Like, right. Even though, yes, I have gotten older, because I have continued filming and working with people in their 20s, which is where I started, I feel like I just, that's kind of where I still am in a mental and emotional standpoint to a certain regard. And because that's who I'm surrounded by and that's the pool that I'm around, a lot of the girls or the people that I've dated are kind of in that same age range. So I don't know, mid-20s to, you know, late 30s. I'm an equal opportunity employer. But I have learned my lesson, especially from dating on reality TV. It's not a good idea.
You mean to do it with someone on your cast
yes,
or to do it at the same time? What?
Which makes it difficult because going back to the whole trauma bonding phenomenon, for those out there who don't know what trauma bonding is, it's like if you're ever in a very high stress, high emotionally charged experience mm-hmm. with someone, like, I mean, some call it like Stockholm syndrome, but it's a little bit different. Me and you are in a bank and someone robs it and we're held hostage all day. Because we've been through that experience together, this bond forms that if there's like intimacy on top of that, it's like this crazy bond that like can't be broken.
Right.
And I feel like the challenge or reality TV is the same way. Take Love Island, for example. Mm-hmm. There's a reason why these people, we're watching it 3 episodes in, are so infatuated and in love with each other that if you see this person make out with somebody else, it's like your whole world comes crashing down.
Right.
What a lot of viewers don't realize is they've been filming for 3, 4, 5 weeks. Once you've spent that much amount of time with a person, that's the equivalent of going on 100 dates.
Yeah.
In the course of that amount of time. Once you spend that much time with each other, and then on top of that, you add intimacy, and on top of that, you add stress and all these other factors, you're bonded.
Yeah.
So I've obviously fallen into that trap on my show. And what tends to happen is because you're in the same world, when you're in this artificial filming environment, our schedule is the same every day.
It works.
We
and
wake
out
up
of
at
it,
the same
it
time.
It does not. Yeah.
Exactly. We go to bed at the same time. We hang out with the same people. We have the same interests. Then you go into your outside life and you're like, I hate everything about
right. I would
your
never
life.
Speak to them. Yeah.
Your music sucks. Your friends suck. Why do you live here?
Right.
Like your place is an absolute disaster,
right.
You know? So it's like all this stuff that at one time made sense. Now it doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
And then it's, but at the same time, but then you're still, you know, expected
I totally
to be with
understand
person.
What you're saying. I did on VH1, I did Celebrity Rehab.
Okay.
So we filmed for 3 weeks. And that is very intense because you're talking about emotional stuff. And, you know, I was dealing with like, you know, serious. I mean, I actually went on for love addiction. I did not have a serious addiction, but I talked a lot about
love addiction.
Yeah.
What's love addiction?
Well,
constantly falling in love?
No, like replacing intensity for thinking that's love, which I bet you have a little bit maybe.
Wait.
So like, well, I'll get to that in a second, but I was dealing with
is this like being a dry drunk? Where you quit alcohol, but now you've just replaced that addiction with another one?
Well, yes, but they say that people that have addictions that like go to AA will like fall in love with each other because they're becoming love addicts because they're replacing one addiction with the other. But love addiction is really for people that can't find stable, healthy relationships because they put a mask on the other person and they just want to believe certain things. And then when the reality of the person comes in, they blame them. There's a lot of attachment and emotional things. But it's like they love being in love, but they're not picking the right person. Do you know anyone like that? That they're just constantly like, they meet someone, they're like, oh my God.
I know a lot of people like
that. Yeah, so that's love addiction. So I was on it for that. Okay. But I was on it, I was with, I don't know if you know these people, Leif Garrett, Eric Roberts, who's on Dancing with the Stars right now. Jason Waller, Janice Dickinson was my roommate.
I know Janice.
So people like that. And if I was in a room with any of those people now, and I haven't spoken to Janice in a decade, obviously, because she's a little difficult, right? But I still have a love for her because of what we went through. It was a really difficult 3 weeks. Like you said, you don't have phones, cameras are on you all the time. I will always feel a certain way. Yeah, always, no matter what happens, I will always feel close to those people.
That's not my problem. So my problem is a little bit different. My problem is, and I think this is part of my upbringing. I grew up in a single parent household, right? My mom and dad divorced when I was very young. And both of them had relationships. You know, obviously my dad had long distance girlfriends. My mom, you know, had boyfriends growing up. So that's what imprinted on me was this marriage just never made sense to me.
Sure.
The idea of the mom and dad being together and through thick and thin and only being with that person, that's just never what imprinted on me was dad having girlfriends, mom having boyfriends. I think that, and also the fact that I'm a Gemini cusp, so I have the emotions of a Cancer, but I think in a lot of ways I'm wired like a Gemini. And the thing about Geminis is they're two-faced, which means in what I've interpreted as they're able to operate in two completely diametrically opposed worlds or universes and be totally fine in either one. So I feel like with me, when it comes to relationships, I am totally fine being single and being a bachelor and being on my own and dating. But then I also, if I'm in a relationship, am totally fine with being able to do that as well. And I think the trouble I get into is because I've been a bachelor for so long.
Right.
And because I am so self-sufficient, this is how I've always been. I make all my own food. I buy my own groceries, cook my own food, clean my own house, do my own laundry.
Yeah, you don't need someone.
I'm like my old Italian grandmother. Like that's where I am. And I think in this day and age, especially younger girls, they're not used to men acting like that.
Yeah.
They're used to the guy being like, yeah, you still up. And they'll come over and then it's like, all right, get a cab, like that sort of thing. I think they're not used to, like they say, chivalry's dead. With me, I'm just like old school. This is how I've always been. I enjoy taking care of people, right? If I have a girl over for a date or if we go out, it's like, I'm gonna do everything because that's just the way that I am. The problem is then, because I think a lot of times girls are so used to being treated like shit by men.
And they fall for you.
And I'm not doing it. I give off like husband, daddy, boyfriend vibes.
Right.
But that's just me being me.
And then they think there's something special because those are the vibes.
So then what happens is, okay, I cook all the time. Every night, if I'm not going out to dinner, I'm gonna make my own food, drink wine, watch TV, hang out. But this is what I do on a regular basis. But if I have a girl over, they're like, oh my God, he's doing all this for me.
Right.
And then
must really like me.
And that's the problem I run into where it's like, no, this is, I mean, I do like you, but I don't necessarily want to be in a relationship. Right. But then they get it crossed because of the way I'm acting that I do.
And then it ends and then they think you're an asshole.
Yes. Yeah. And then they're like, oh my God, you know.
You led me on.
Whereas if I would have just been an asshole from the beginning, I have friends like this. I'm like, dude, you are just like, I could never treat a girl like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of times it's like there's guys out there just objectify women. I'm like, I could not do that. But it's those guys that get away with being assholes and they never get called on it because I think girls set their expectations so low that they can't be disappointed.
Right.
Whereas with me, because of the way that I am, I almost feel like I force them to set their expectations very high. And then when I don't follow through necessarily with what they thought I was intending, I always run into trouble.
Right. Are you dating somebody now?
Yes.
Okay. Is marriage something in your future that you want, or you don't care? I know what you said about the imprinting, but do you think—
I do. Here's the thing. I almost feel like, okay, I feel like in order for me to get married, a couple of things are going to happen. I'm going to have to move somewhere rural, okay? I feel like I'm going to have to move to, like, the mountains or, like, somewhere. For me, like, when there's a lot of activity going on, I have a very hard time of just focusing. It's like, again, to go back to another economic principle, it's the idea of making a decision and being happy with the decision that you've made.
Right.
So if you go to Baskin Robbins and you get ice cream, it's the hardest decision to make because there are 31 different flavors. Yeah. And not only do you have a hard time picking a flavor, but then once you finally decide on a flavor, then you're looking at everyone else and you're like, did I make the right decision?
Do you think you have a grass is greener complex?
Yeah. Absolutely. But I think the reason I do is because of what I'm exposed to.
Because of the distractions that you have.
Whereas if you go to it's like buyer's remorse, right? But then if you go to an ice cream shop where there's three flavors, chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry, mm-hmm. not only is it easy to make the decision, you are totally fine with the decision that you made because there's not all these other options.
Do you think you're ever capable of falling in love with someone so much that if Giselle walked in or whoever your like hall pass is, right, that you would be like, no, I love this girl?
Yeah, absolutely. I just haven't found.
But have you ever been in love?
Yeah, I have. I have. I just, again, I feel like what tends to happen is this struggle, this push and pull begins to happen where I think a lot of times girls fall in love with who I am. And then once we're together, then they don't want me to be that person anymore.
Right. Because it intimidates them.
Or makes them feel insecure, whatever. But that's just who I am. That's just how I've always been. And that's who I need to be in order
Which sometimes is why it's easier for you to date someone who has been in reality TV.
Exactly. Because they have the same person. Because they understand it. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, this is the guy. I'm the same person. I have not changed. But now you now want to...
Change me.
Mm-hmm. And I can't, because then if I change, then I'm not... Like, this is why I am on TV.
Right. You're not going to apologize for...
And this is who I've always been. This is who I am when you met me, and this is who I'm going to be for the foreseeable future. So that's kind of... And like I said, that's what always ends up happening when I'm in a relationship, is it's fine at first, but then as it goes on, I don't want you doing this. I don't want you going here. I don't want you posting this. I don't want you traveling here. I don't want you going away for long periods of time. And I'm like, but that's what I have to do. And then I end up taking all this energy that I could be focusing on my life and to my career into just trying to keep a relationship afloat. And then I start having this reoccurring dream where I know this, what it is, when I'm in a relationship that I need to get out of, but I don't know how to, I have this reoccurring dream where I'm on some sort of a unstable structure, a rope, a ladder, side of a building, and I'm hanging on for dear life, but I can't climb any further and I can't climb down. And I'm like, at any second, I'm going to fall. Mm. So the only thing I can do to hang on is to hang on. And I feel like once I start having that dream, that's when I'm like, all right, this is, I got to, yeah.
If they did a celebrity version of The Bachelor and you were on it, do you think you could pick one girl?
Yeah.
And actually marry her at the end? Is that a goal?
I don't know if, I can't say that because I wouldn't go on the show with the goal of, hey, I'm going to go on the show. I'm going to meet someone that I've never met before, and I'm going to marry this person. I would be open to that.
Okay.
But again, I'm all about like, I know everyone says, but I'm like a chemistry person. And mm-hmm. it's like, I don't necessarily look at someone and I'm like, I don't go necessarily based strictly on physical appearance and looks. Like, I am all about like people I connect with, especially the older I get. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go to bars and pick up and do like the one night stand thing because I'm like, if I don't connect with this person, I'm not going to waste my time.
Right.
For me, like that's what's important to me. But yeah, I have I'm open to it. I think I have a lot. I really do have a lot to give and a lot to provide. I just don't feel like right now where I'm at in my career. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, you're 42. What are you waiting for? I'm like, I don't know. I don't actually know. All I know is I have a lot of friends who are married and have kids. And they're like, don't rush. No rush. Yeah. What you're doing, keep doing it until the wheels fall off.
Are kids on your bucket list ever?
So yes, and here's why. I need to have at least one boy mm-hmm. that's my blood. I'd love to adopt, but it needs to be my blood, because if not, my last name dies. I'm the last DiVincenzo in my bloodline. I also think I'd be a great dad. I have 11 nieces and nephews. My sister has 9 kids.
Wow.
My other sister has 2. And I'm just naturally so good with children. Maybe because we're wired very, very similar, because I still have the mentality of a child. But I look at kids and I'm like, dude, I would love to, you know, have a child of my own one day. If there's not one out there already, I don't know. Might be.
Speaking of bucket list, what else is on your bucket list?
I started my own production company, so I'd like to start producing my own shows.
Like reality type, or?
Could be. Docuseries, reality type. You know, I think because I've been on TV for so long, I don't just think like a cast member. I also think from a producer, and I think I'd be, I mean, I hosted a travel show for 2 years. I won an Emmy for that.
I know, that's amazing.
Thank you. So I think
that must have felt amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, that's a great sense of credibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're not just some reality star.
Exactly. And that was the first time, I think, after being on reality TV for as long as I was, I think that was such a major evolution, because for the longest time, the only person I knew how to be was Johnny Bananas.
Mm-hmm.
Again, sarcastic, tongue in cheek, everything's a punchline, don't take anything seriously. Then when I started travel hosting, they were like, we're gonna protect you, okay? We're not looking to make you look bad or to edit you to look bad.
Yeah.
We want the best out of you. So it is okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to not have everything be a joke. In fact, like, the more jokes you tell, the less serious the audience is gonna take you.
Right.
And one of the best pieces of advice I ever got was from one of my producers. They said, a well-timed joke makes the information go down better. Because it's the exact opposite. Now, if you're just boring and you're not funny and you're just constantly like, just being boring, then that also turns people off.
Right.
But if you're able to put the information out there and then every once in a while throw a little zinger in there, it really helps, you know, people take the information. So that was the first time going on First Look, which is the travel show that I did, where I was able to then take this persona that I learned on reality TV and then morph it into a host and an interviewer. I have a podcast now called Death, Tax, and Bananas, where I record out of actually this exact same studio. Mm-hmm. And I think what enabled me to be as successful at my podcast as I am was being a travel host.
Yeah.
I've always been a terrible listener. I'm a great talker. But when it comes to this day, I'll meet a girl and like after 10 minutes she goes, so are you gonna ask about me? And I'm like, fuck. And it happens all the time. I'm just so bad at, and I don't do it on purpose.
Right.
I'm just so good at talking. I'm just bad at listening. Okay. So,
Okay, so any shows coming up that you could tell us about that you know you're going to do?
No, I will say that we've talked about multiple shows I've been on, and there are 2 of those shows. There's a good possibility I will be going back on them.
Well, I hope you go back on the trailers.
In the near future. Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, I need a second shot after, you know.
Yeah, well, I think that's the whole point.
Being murdered first.
So maybe we just figured that one out.
Mm-hmm.
I would put money on that it's the Traitors. When does the Traitors start filming again?
Not sure. I think like summer-ish
and
time.
It's season 3 now that they would
be? Season, yes, it'll be
so
season
3. So wait,
does 3.
That mean in the summer they already filmed?
Wait, I don't know. It'll be season 4.
Season 4.
Because they've already filmed an episode that is yet to air.
Oh, right. So this summer they filmed, so next summer. Okay,
exactly.
Well, I'm hoping if you didn't already film one that you will be filming.
Me too.
That's my goal for you.
Do you have any advice for me? You watch the first one. What should I do differently this time if I go?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, after watching the 2 seasons, let's think. You know what's interesting? So the first season was like with civilians, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then some celebrities. Mm-hmm. And the second one was all Bravo, NBC stars?
Yeah, across the board.
And remind me, you were on the second one or the first one?
I was on the second.
So with all the celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think you got knocked off so quickly?
Because I was too awesome.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think I was too entertaining. Okay. I think part of it is I think my reputation followed me along. And the problem is with a lot of reality competition people, Big Brother Survivor people.
They're threatened.
They're threatened because all they see is, oh, this guy's won the challenge 7 times.
Yeah.
But what a lot of people don't realize is that, yeah, but the challenge is a physical show, right? The challenge is a physical, strategic show. It's not necessarily about spotting liars.
Yeah.
And that's what I said. I'm like, God, like, I remember going in there, and after we did our round table, I had no fucking clue. I'm like, the only person I know that's not a traitor is me.
Right.
Because I didn't get touched on the shoulder. It could literally be anybody else here. Right. But I think a lot of people thought just because, oh, well, he's done so well on this other show, that means he's going to be good at this. Mm-hmm. I also think that
did you develop some good friendships? Like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Great. I was going to say maybe you weren't close enough to people that wanted to keep
There was one person I wasn't close to or one person that felt really threatened by me, and that's who ended up, Dan, who ended up being a traitor, who ended up killing me.
Oh, right. Okay. I see.
So, but yeah, I mean,
Would you want to be a trader or
yes, hell yeah, I'd want to be a trader. Now, would they make me a trader? Probably not. But I think that's the only thing that's going to save me from being murdered.
Right, right, right.
Can't murder myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, very interesting.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that. I think I covered everything. You answered half of my questions before I even asked you.
Really?
So you're pretty good at this.
Well, good at talking. Yeah.
Well, what if people want to follow you, get more information on you, watch your shows? How can they reach you and look you up?
Johnny Bananas across all platforms, except for TikTok, because apparently TikTok would rather have this 17-year-old idiot that hasn't posted in 6 months with 40 followers have the name Johnny Bananas instead of me.
Wow.
Yeah, they're the only ones. Well, actually, I'm sorry, Snapchat, I'm your boy Bananas, but. Instagram, Twitter, we're both like, oh yeah, Johnny Bananas? Yeah, we see, you're the guy, here's the name. TikTok's like, no, we can't do that. So anyways, TikTok, effin' bananas.
Oh, wow, okay.
E-F-F-I-N, bananas. I have a podcast called Death, Taxes, and Bananas. It mainly covers the challenge, but it also, any show that I do, I cover. I did Traitors, I did House of Villains.
But it's not necessarily that you're going to go and talk about the Housewives of Orange County.
Not good. Yeah. I've had Tamara on.
Oh, you have. Okay.
Tamara's my girl.
Nice. Okay.
Shout out, T-Dog. but yeah, and then if you're ever in South Florida, which you are, you're going to come in.
I'm going to come in.
Come check out my boxing studio, Rumble. It's in Boca Raton. It's an amazing time. Who knows?
Are you there sometimes? Can fans see you?
I live 5 minutes away. I'm here all the time.
Okay. Is that where you work out?
Yeah.
Is that where you get your nice physique?
Get these things from? No, this is just, I'm wearing a Spanx Slim shirt, Skims. Yeah, I actually don't look this good without the shirt on. Just, it's the shirt.
Smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, okay. It's smoke and mirrors. Okay. It's the pleats. it's an optical illusion. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, you know?
Wait, the last question I do have for you, for people that still see you in this Johnny Bananas role, give me a day in the life. They think you're like doing cocaine off some girl's stomach and like going out all night partying. Just briefly give me a quick day in the life of what you're doing.
I only do tequila off of girl's stomachs. Okay. Cocaine's off the butt cheeks. Anyone who knows anything knows that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not, dude, my hardcore party days are completely behind me.
Okay.
I'm so much more now into like just, again, health and wellness, physical, mental. Day in the life, literally, I wake up early. I either go for a run on the beach or I, you know, my boxing studio is 5 minutes from my house. Mm-hmm. Make dinner for myself, drink some wine, watch some Netflix, and that's pretty much it. A lot of people, that is the funny thing. Like a lot
so
of people.
You're not going
to
Miami and partying.
I do. I went there for Halloween.
Okay. But not, it's not like every Friday.
That's not, and that's what I'm saying. Like there's this big misconception by people where they think that I live because of who I am, because of like, you know, kind of what I put out there sometimes on social media. They think that I live this like crazy, extravagant life.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, I have a house in California in Orange County. It's in like a very sleepy neighborhood. Like that's like my fortress of solitude. That's where I go to like, you know, ground myself. Mm-hmm. I have a pet squirrel that lives in my tree. So RIP Peanut. Yeah, dude, I'm a squirrel dad. Okay. So yeah, but that's why I think I've been able to survive in this world for as long as I have. I'm a big believer in not just energy, but in balance.
Yeah.
And something that I learned that actually resonated with me, and it's like I didn't realize that I was doing this, but this is, I think, why I've been able to kind of like not fall off the edge. You know, the yin and yang symbol symbolizes balance or chaos and stability. right? Mm-hmm. And once you find chaos and stability, that's where balance comes from.
Yeah.
If you have too much, if you have one foot planted too far in chaos, then you're the guy partying in Miami doing cocaine off girls' stomachs all the time. Mm-hmm. And you have no reference point for what a stable life is. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have your foot planted too far in stability, then you don't have any sort of life, because that's where growth comes from. Growth comes from chaos. Growth comes from the outside world. And if you're just insulated in this little box and you don't ever let yourself experience anything, and you're so guarded and so protected from the world, you're not going to grow. So what I found was, again, having family very close to me, having friends, and I mean friends that like knew me before my reality television journey, real friends, having those people living a sedentary, chill, calm life, and having that as your foundation.
Yeah.
As long as I have that stability in my life, I can have my other foot planted in chaos, and I could go to Amsterdam and I could film these shows for 10 weeks and I could party in Miami, do all this stuff. But I always have that place to come back to where I can then, you know, hit the reset button and, you know, just kind of ground myself and come back to who I am. And it's the people that don't have that that I feel like are the ones that, you know, go off the edge.
Right. Love it. So for any women listening, you have to make sure you're into health and wellness.
Yep.
Nice cooked dinners and not be a jealous person.
Health and wellness, nice. But listen, health and wellness, but if we have a nice cooked dinner, don't get the wrong idea, okay? It's for me too. It's not just for you. But yeah, I'm also America's number one slow dancer, expert parallel parker, and I have a credit score of 680.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, nice job.
Hey, thanks. You too.
Thank you for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time. Understood.